Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Whether you're fly fishing in a stream, getting those ankles wet, or deep in the ocean casting nets, fish nerds. Fish nerds. Fish nerds. It's a podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Fish Nerds, a show about fish, fishing, and eating fish. A show that's always interesting, usually funny, and mostly true. I'm Clay Groves, Chief Executive Fish Nerd, Licensed Fishing Guide, and your new best fishing friend. Today on the show, we are super lucky because Lawrence Gunther, North America's only blind tournament angler and host of the Bluefish Radio Show, is here with us. And I'll just tell you, the Bluefish Radio Show, this is from his website, features subjects and people of special interest to the future of fish and health and sustainable fishing. Notable interviews include Canadian Commissioner on the International Joint Commission. I don't know what that means. The NOAA Director of Sustainable Fisheries, Ontario's Environment Commissioner, directors of both the Canadian and, you know what, he's Canadian. So here's our Canadian friend, Lawrence. Welcome to the show.
I'm good, man. Just like I'm thawing out here. It's freaking cold up here, man. It's freezing.
All right, what part of Canada are you in?
The Canada's capital, the Ottawa. Ottawa.
And so those of us who live in the United States, we don't know what that means. So is it if you were like using the United States as a measure?
Are you direct, straight north of Ogdensburg, New York?
Of New York, okay.
Yeah, so. Ogdensburg, New York. So it's like on the Ottawa River. The Ottawa River flows into the St. Lawrence River there, but straight north of on Ogdensburg, and you bump right into Ottawa.
All right, and so you said it's super cold up there. You guys are suffering with the polar vortex?
Yeah.
Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you. Good for ice fishing, but it's windy. It's windy and cold. That's
The wind ruins everything.
Yeah.
You know, I'm an ice fishing guide. I'm on the ice almost every day, and I don't care what the weather is as far as temperature goes. But wind just ruins my day every day.
Especially on the ice, right? Because there's nothing slowing the wind down. So, you know, you can be on the ice and it's always, or on the lake, it's always seems like colder. And then when you get on the land and behind the trees, it's warm. And then you can't complain how cold the day was because no one's going to believe you.
Right. You come home and you're like, your face is flush and on fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now you're let's just deal with this elephant in the room first right away. We need to talk about this. You're Canadian. I mean, just kidding. You're blind, right?
I'm a blind Canadian.
You're blind Canadian, which is like the most polite of all blind people.
Yes. Sorry. I'm sorry.
Sorry. Yeah. So tell me. First of all, you went blind gradually over the course of your life.
Yeah. I was eight when I was registered blind, mm-hmm. and I was just missing my central vision, sort of reverse RP. Mm-hmm. And then when I was in my early 20s, got to the point where I started having, it was functionally blind. Like if I went out at night, I couldn't see anything. Or if I was outside during the day in the wintertime and I went inside, I couldn't see anything. So then I figured, well, you better get a white stick or a dog. Mm-hmm. And
I hate dogs. So I got a stick.
I'm not walking around with a cane.
My stick's name is Ralphie.
No, man. I like have a dog, right? Yeah. You know, living in the city, can I have a dog, go anywhere with a dog?
That was perfect. You got like a border collie or something? What kind of dog is it?
Big black lab. Got him in the States.
Nice.
Big black lab. And he came from a kennel that was really highly regarded for producing hunting dogs. Mm-hmm. So this guide dog, man, when he wasn't guiding me, he was hunting. Like he was the most amazing hunter. I'd let him off the leash in the ravine and he could fish too. He'd stand there in the shallows and every so often his head would bob in and come out with a little minnow and
I bet he ate it too, right? It's like
everything.
Well, labs are swimming dogs. They get the webbed toes. I mean, they're just built for the water anyway, so it's perfect for you. So you were, before you were 8 years old, let's go back a little bit. So you went blind, started going blind around eight. Were you already fishing before that?
Yeah. Yeah, I got pictures of me and my family. Like, it looks really funny with cane poles and everything and the funny hats, right? And
yeah,
me and my three brothers, my mom and dad. Yeah, I was fishing with a cane pole, like right from the beginning.
That's classic way to fish, too. They call it tankara fishing now. So that way they can charge a lot more money for it.
Or the cane pole.
Yeah. Uh-oh, no, let's make it. Now it's Japanese. So so as you were going blind, did you keep fishing or did you take a break from it for a while and come back to it?
I did all that outdoor stuff. My one brother that I was closest to age, and he went in the whole sports direction, you know, hockey, baseball, all that. But I went into scouts and fishing and camping and canoeing, everything outdoors. And I even, you know, got my hunting license when I was 15.
Oh, that's great. That doesn't scare me at all. That's fine.
Hey, number one rule when you're hunting is you got to ID your, you know, your quarry. You got to know what you're shooting at before you pull the trigger.
Right. How do you know?
No, you know, the only thing I was ever good at shooting was black bears because, you know, they're really big. They're really close, right? So, you know, I'd go out in the bush and the guy'd say, all right, you stand here and the bear might come out down there and you think you'll see it? And I said, no. So he walked me closer and he walked me closer. So then if I got within 20, 30 feet.
Well, you can smell him then.
Yeah, they'd smell me. That's for sure. Yeah.
God, that's insane. So, but let's get to fishing though. So it's a fishing show. So now you got into tournament angling. I want to hear about a blind tournament angler. And first of all, what kind of tournaments are we talking about?
Well, fishing tournaments, bass, you know, pike, muskie, salmon, trout, everything. I got into it because, I mean, I was always just fishing tournaments, just, you know, friendly charity tournaments, but I never made a big deal about it. Mm-hmm. But I started blogging about this blind fishing boat thing I invented, right? And it was a plastic folding porta boat, and I put an electric motor on it, and I loaded it up with all these electronic talking beeping things so I could go out and fish. And I did that because I had a talking GPS system finally.
That's really, by the way, I saw a video of this on your website, and I put links up at fishnerds.com. So people can see it. You know, it was a trolling motor, not a big outboard. So people don't need to be afraid of you.
Yeah. So, no, I'm only going like as fast as you can walk, right?
Right.
And it's a plastic boat, so it just bounces off stuff anyways.
No big deal.
But it was great. I mean, I could get back out in the water. And then I was blogging about that. And then people said, well, you should, you know, you do some more tournament fishing. I got invited to do more tournaments. So I joined more fishing clubs because everyone's looking for a fishing buddy, right? Someone to share the gas with, fill a seat in the boat with. So I said, well, best way to find fishing buddies is to join these fishing clubs. And they're all doing tournaments. So I started joining fishing clubs, walleye and bass. And next thing you know, I'm fishing 15, 20 tournaments a year. That's and amazing. doing well.
And winning, you get big paper checks and all the things?
Oh, well, I've won some money. I've won some money. I have lots of trophies, of trophies and bragging rights. But I like to say that I can beat most of my sighted competitors most of the time. So I finish, you know, in the top 10, top 20, but at least in the top half of the pile most of the time for sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, how good, so as a, as a blind angler, your other senses get a little more enhanced, right?
I just focus more.
You focus more, but you can see you're listening better, you're feeling the strings better.
Yeah. You're focusing what's in your hand is your fishing rod what's going on down there. And you're trying to visualize all the time what's at the end of your line, right? Like fishing is about visualizing.
It really is.
Yeah. You're visualizing. You're thinking, what's down there? What am I feeling now? What's that? Is that a bite? Is that a weed? Is that a rock? Is that a gravel? Is that mud?
So do you like lures that just bounce across the bottom so you can just really get a feel for the contours of the lake? Or do you like a big vibrating, you know,
I start with a spinner bait. I always start with a spinner bait because that's my search tool. You can throw it into trees. You can pull it back out. You can throw it into bulrushes. You can pull it back out. It rarely, really gets stuck on anything.
I've never caught a fish on a spinner bait.
No?
Nope. I hate them. I can't figure those stupid things out.
Well, I just use a white one.
Yeah.
It's the only color.
You think.
Spinner baits, huh? It's a search tool.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's a search tool. And then you can feel the depth. You can count it down. So you can get it. I really, it's a way for me to extend my reach, right? My feel. And then once I figured that out, yeah, you can cast it forever. And then I'll change it up, and I'll use maybe I'll slow it down with plastics. I do a lot of drop shotting, a lot of jigging. I really like the vertical fishing, the up and down fishing, more than the casting. All right.
Obviously. I like that better myself.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It's slower. It's slower, but once you're on the fish, it's the best way to catch them, right? But sometimes it doesn't work, but usually it does.
If you can stay on top of the fish. Mm-hmm. It's a precision. That's, by the way, that's why I like ice fishing the best.
Yeah.
I like that vertical presentation. I like that visualization you were talking about, and I like the precision. Like, I made a hole right here. I'm going to fish this spot, and I'm not moving. Like, I'm staying on that fish.
So if you're on the right spot, you're on the right spot, and thanks to GPS, you can mark those spots, go back to them, right?
But you can, and GPS and sonars. Now, so as a blind angler,
yeah,
all these tools they make for sighted anglers, all the sonars and ice fishing, it's all made for people who have vision. Do they have they adapted those for people without vision?
They have. Like, yeah, some of them. Like, there's a guy in Michigan. He's invented the Depth Whisperer, mm-hmm. and it's a little
20 feet deep.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and I just plug it into the back of my Lowrance, and it announces every time there's a sudden depth change. Mm-hmm. It'll say sudden change 22, 24, 28, 32.
Nice.
And it'll say. Shallow water, 2 feet. Shallow water, 2 feet. And it's my boat, so then I'll yell at the guy, hey, what the hell are we doing in here, man? But then, so I have that. I have the depth talker hooked up. And then I also flip my Lowrance into fish alarms, fish beeps. So then it clicks with bait fish, and it double beeps with big fish and single beeps for small fish. So I know if there's fish down there under the boat. And I always fish off the back of my boat because I leave the front to my buddy, even though it's my boat.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know there's fish below me, right at my feet, because that's where my transducer is for the back fish finder. And mm-hmm. then I know how deep it is because of the depth whisperer. And I'll just say sometimes, hey, stop with the electric motor. And then I'll just throw a drop shot or a single right down there, right? Boom, catch one every time.
That's great.
Oh, yeah.
So cool. So doing the same thing the rest of us are doing, just using your other senses, no big deal.
Yeah, no big deal. And, you know, really good anglers, they feel the fish bite too. They're feeling and they're using their rod like the way it's meant to be used, like a sensing tool, right? Mm-hmm. Most of the time your fishing rod is a sensing tool. It's a launcher sometimes, every time you cast. It's for controlling fish during the play when you're reeling them in, you know, when you're lucky to catch one.
Mm-hmm.
It's for feeling. Most of the time it's for feeling and setting the hook too, right? There's that. There's setting the hook, which is mm-hmm. the assault part where you attack. You switch from being the prey to the predator.
Right.
But mostly you're feeling around with it. You're feeling what's down there with your rod. That's why they're so damn expensive.
They can be, yeah.
Now the good ones feel better, right, for sure.
They do. So, it's funny, both my daughters have been fishing since before they could walk. And nice. So when they go fishing, they don't even care about using sonars.
No.
They can feel what's happening underwater, and they will outfish almost anybody because they're doing it fully on sensation. They can feel the most slightest movement in the water on their rods.
Nice. They're paying attention.
They're really in it, and they don't fish long. They're my oldest daughter, her style of fishing is go out, catch a fish, and take a nap. That's it.
But if kids don't catch a fish in 10 minutes, the day's over anyways.
Well,
right?
that's how I am. I actually don't like fishing. I hate that. My least favorite phrase on the planet is that's why it's called fishing. That makes me insane. I like catching fish. I like holding this big slimy thing.
Yeah.
And fishing itself, it's weird. It doesn't make any sense. It's the dumbest sport ever.
I like trying to figure out the puzzle.
Yeah. Well,
what's the puzzle? What's going on?
Well, so this actually brings me to my first topic. I want to talk about this puzzle. So we're dealing with ice fishing in New Hampshire right now, and our biggest predatory fish is the lake trout. Do you have them up your way?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so it's our big target this winter, and I'm guiding for them. Now, 2 weeks ago, I guided. I was on the ice 11 hours, and we, on the sonars, we marked hundreds of these fish all day long, and they would chase our lures and never commit. We didn't land one.
You know what you do? You know what the problem is sometimes with lake trout?
Yeah, they're horrible animals.
No, they like the chase. And well, if you stop retrieving, they stop chasing.
Well, that's exactly where I'm going with this. So, So I've been doing some research on it and I've been doing it wrong.
Yeah.
So I would start them chasing and I would stop so they would come bite the bait.
Yeah. No.
But they were doing what you said, right?
Yeah. As soon as it stops, they turn away.
Exactly.
They'll chase it right up to the hole.
Yes.
Right to the hole.
So boom. That's exactly right. I just learned this and I'm a guide.
Yeah.
So I watched this YouTube video and I saw this happen and I went out yesterday and I drilled a hole in the ice. I marked a fish, dropped my bait down to the bottom and a lake trout started chasing it and I reeled in as fast as I could and the fish came up within like 5 feet of the hole.
And slammed it.
No, I stopped and he stopped.
Oh!
but I brought him up from 60 feet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if I had kept going, he would have grabbed it, I think.
Oh,
and so yeah. I'm really
it's
excited.
It's the hardest thing. You see it, especially if you're using sonar. And I guess you're using sonar. Right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So you see it happening.
Yeah, I never fish blind.
You want to stop so they can close the distance. And,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Now, I always say instinct is just because when I'm fishing for like white perch, it's chase stop.
Yeah. And walleye, same thing. It's like a cat with a ball of yarn, right? You're always twitching it and moving it around and teasing them.
Well, with the white perch, they prefer you to do nothing.
Dead
like,
stick.
Once they see it, like I put the rod down on a bucket.
Yeah.
And I watch you can't do this, but I watch for the twitch and then I pick up the thing.
Yeah.
So
whitefish, same thing.
So whitefish is my nemesis.
Yeah.
We don't have whitefish. Are almost extinct in New Hampshire. And they're called, they're using the word extirpated, is what Fish and Game said. So a few years ago, my friend Dave and I went on a quest to catch and eat all the fish in the state.
Yeah.
And the only one we didn't get is the lake whitefish.
Wow.
And Fish and Game said, give it up. You're never going to see that fish. It's impossible, blah, blah, blah. And then like last year, my friend sends me a live video on Facebook in my favorite fishing lake, which is the worst lake in the state, of a live whitefish.
Wow. Yeah.
So now I know they're there.
Yeah, they're around. Like, we got more whitefish up here around where I live than lake trout. Like,
oh,
1,000 to 1.
We're always trying to
encourage people to catch whitefish instead of lake trout. Go after the whitefish.
Yeah.
Whitefish, they lift up when they bite stuff, right? Because their mouths are under their head.
So right. They lift almost.
Yeah, so when they bite, they don't pull down on the rod. You don't feel them bite. The rod tip lifts up, right? So you have to watch your tip pop up when they bite. Like almost like a crappie.
Yeah, fish are so weird. But I'm so glad though you knew this lake trout thing that I didn't know.
No, not many people do, I don't think.
No, because I've been fishing with guides and lots of other people who are good at, and not one of them has ever shown me that technique.
Mm.
And so now I've got that figured out. And now, so this week I'm taking some kids out and I've got enough sonars for every kid to have their own.
Wow.
And now it's a game. You see one, you know, you pretend that little fish is going to get eaten. What does he want to do? Run away as fast as he can. And you do not let that trout have that food.
No, you want get it away from him.
Yep. You want the angriest trout you could find. And that'll be the game we play. And the kid, my bet is the 9 and 10 year olds catch more fish than their parents.
Man, oh man, they're going to have those rods ripped right out of their hands.
Oh man, I hope so. I sure hope so.
Because those Lakers, they hit like a freight train.
When they hit, yeah. So our lake is called Silver Lake. We run a hashtag on Instagram called Suck It Silver Lake. Because on any other lake in New Hampshire or Maine, I can go catch lake trout. Within 10 minutes, I got one on the ice.
Nice.
In this lake, it's one or two fish a day. It's an amazing day for fishing.
Hmm.
But people still pay me to go on it. So
lake trout, you know, they seem to be struggling a lot of places. They're struggling in a lot of locations and not doing great population wise. I think, you know, the water's getting warmer and these fish like temperatures in the 52, 54 degree range.
True.
So they're not having an easy time of it in a lot of places.
In New Hampshire, I don't know about you guys, but we have big tournaments. We have like next weekend is the Great Rotary Ice Fishing Derby. It's one of the largest ice fishing derbies in New England. And on Winnipesaukee, they'll catch all these fish and they nail them all to what's called the fishing board. The largest fish are nailed on the board and the big one wins prizes. So they're taking out all the largest lake trout they can find. So yeah. All these 40-year-old fish pulled out and get nailed to a board so someone can potentially win prize money. And I hate that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm like, it's 2019. We can do a catch and release derby.
Yeah.
We can do a digital board. You know, it's
that old fish, that's biomassed, all the nastiness. Oh.
Well, they don't. And well, it's funny. They don't. No one eats these fish. They get nailed to the board.
Yeah.
And then they go to the local it's called Squam Lake Conservation, and they get fed to raptors.
Oh,
so they get fed to birds. Like, yeah. You know, but
the breeders, the big breeders,
the best fish in the state.
Yeah. Ever.
Yeah.
I got some educating to do. That's what I try to do with my charity is educate people about, you know, catch and release. Yeah. If you're going to do that, here's some good tips on how to do that. And if you want to harvest some fish for the dinner plate, here's some tips on how to do that sustainably.
Well, let's move into that. Let's talk about your charity and then we could talk about your.
All right.
So give me the pitch for your charity. You've got a charity. I want to hear about it.
Yeah, well, we started Bluefish Canada in 2012, and it's about the water, the blue, and it's about the fish, right? Because you have to think of both. If you're going to have, it's about the future of fish and fishing. So if it's about the fish, they have to have habitat, they have to have clean water and healthy water. And fishing means, you know, you have to have anglers who know how to catch and release properly and how to harvest sustainably. So we're really focusing on taking anglers and making them a little bit environmental, you know, a little bit conservation minded, because you got to have that understanding. If you want to play in this game, you have to be able to do it with knowledge, with wisdom, with ethics, you know, responsibly, all those buzzwords, but it can't just be a party. And unfortunately, when you watch, you know, a lot of those TV fishing shows, it's all about how to catch fish and how to catch big fish and how to catch many fish.
Mm-hmm.
And you, more and more, you're starting to see a little bit of conservation being brought into it, because I think people are getting aware that we also have to teach the ethics of the fishing as well, right? I mean, if the sport is going to withstand the criticism from, you know, from organizations like PETA, then we also need to make sure that we're doing it in the right way, the responsible way. We have so many tools now to do it the wrong way or to make a horrendous mess out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's more important than ever, I think, that we do it properly. So, yeah, well, that's what we do. We try to educate and inspire people to be citizen scientists. We're into creating urban fishing nodes. So, you know, you can fish in your city at publicly sanctioned locations.
Oh, by the way, urban fishing.
Yeah.
Underrated sport. Holy smokes. Is it the best? I mean, access is right there. You don't need to go anywhere. You don't need a boat and no one's doing it. The fish are there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can get your buddies and, you know, it's an evening after work, right? You five, you know, you leave after work, you go, boom, you're there with your buddies for a couple, 3 hours and your friends and people show up and it's a social thing.
Well, it's funny. On last week's show, Steve McConey, the comedian, he said, you go on, he fishes in Manhattan all the time. And he says, if you go on the subway on any given day, nobody talks to you. Walk on the subway with a fishing rod, everyone talks to you.
Isn't that cool? So you want to make a friend, and the lesson there is, if you want to make a friend, you can walk around with a fishing rod.
Exactly. It's like having a puppy. So everyone wants to talk to you and touch you. So,
I have a dog and a fishing rod, man.
people are afraid to touch your dog because it's got the vest on. It says, don't pet me.
Yeah. No, not everyone's afraid, but yeah. It still draws them in.
It's still a cute dog. All right. So you get this charity going on, and it's all about education and get people to be more better stewards.
Yeah.
Now, because we have a problem in the United States right now where a lot of anglers think if you are trying to be a good steward to the environment, you are like some crazy leftist communist thing. Like, it's the strangest. I get in these debates online all the time.
Hmm.
I'll say, hey, maybe we shouldn't kill all the fish. And I go, are you commie? You socialist? I'm like, well, no, I'm not even thinking in those terms, but somehow I'm getting pegged into these terms. Now, in Canada, you guys are a lot more progressive.
We're a lot more polite, but we're still having those same thoughts.
Yeah.
nicer about what they say about it.
More pleasant about it. Yeah. So do you find that you get pushback sometimes when you start saying, hey, maybe we, for our tournament, we don't want to kill all the fish? Or
you know what? I've been walking down this path now for quite a few years. Like I really love fishing, and I have a master's in environmental studies I got a few years ago, And so, you know, I'm tuned into sort of environmental issues, and I love fishing. So to me, I want to do both. I want to do both. And yeah, there's hardcore guys out there that, you know, believe that if you're fishing, you shouldn't, you know, you just go fishing. You don't have to worry about it. Mm-hmm. And any environmentalist is an enemy because they just want to stop you from fishing.
Right. They believe that.
Yeah, and they believe that. And then there's environmental groups out there that hate, you know, that believe that, you know, fishers, anglers are out there collecting science, watching, you know, caring, nurturing the environment. But there's a lot of environmental groups out there too that, you know, don't believe in fishing, right? And they don't believe you should ever put anything in the water. You shouldn't even touch it because you might soil it in some way and spoil it for the fish. So as long as I know I'm equally hated by both the extreme environmentalists and those, you know, hardcore right-wing anglers, then I know I'm sort of in the mainstream of the middle, you know, that silent majority, right? And that's sort of our play areas, is the people who just want to, you know, take their grandchildren fishing and pass them on the pleasure of fishing and not have their grandchildren embarrass them with all sorts of questions about, Grandpa, are we hurting the fish? You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, well, it's funny because I always tell my kids, look, fishing is violence. It's an act of violence. You're taking this fish. It's, I thought it was going to have a nice meal, and you're yanking it up out into the sky.
Yeah.
So when you do that, let's be aware of that.
Yeah.
Let's not ignore that. And when we're handling that fish, let's be as kind as possible. So imagine you're abducted by aliens. They can drop you on the ground, kick you around, take a photo and put you back. Or they can gently hold you and take a photo and put you back. That's your choices. So
yeah,
that's kind of how we handle it with the kids.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, all those little things, like, you know, don't touch them with your wet hands. Don't hold them to your clothes and wipe the slime off. The slime is super important to them, you know. And then they say, well, what about you? Are you hurting them with the hooks? Well, I mean, I take a whole bunch of girl guides fishing every spring, 60, 70 girl guides, and they're catching all these panfish. And I said, look, all these fish are eating other fish. And all these fish we're catching are going to be eaten by other fish. And you think all these pokes and pricks and, you know, dorsal fins and everything with all the pin needles on them and would prevent them from being eaten. I said, but, you know, if it did, there'd be so many of them, but they still get eaten. Eaten because... Yeah, because other fish don't mind swallowing those fish with all those pokey bits on them. They can do it.
Pokey bits. I think they get over it fast. I'm like, yeah, it probably hurts, but they don't remember.
Yeah, like, and then if it hurt too much, they wouldn't eat and they wouldn't live and they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't breed. So the softy ones, the crybabies, don't get to
breed. Don't be such a baby. Just eat the hook. Yeah, I'm going to try to get there's a book out called What a Fish Feels. And I've been trying to get the author on my show for a while. I haven't tried that hard, but a couple emails, mostly ignored. And he's all about fish have feelings and emotions.
Oh my God. Yeah, there's all that stuff. There are scientists out there that believe that fish, you know, can actually play checkers too. But there's a great scientist here that I talked to about that. I had him on my show not so long ago, and we were talking about fish feeling and what they feel. And he says there's a handful of scientists around the world doing not so good science.
Lawrence, you make a podcast. Let's talk about your podcast. Why do you torture yourself?
Oh, why? Because I was promised millions of dollars by doing it.
the big podcast money, huh?
Oh yeah, all the sponsors that would be lining up, and you know, I, you know what though, for me, what I like about podcasting, and I honest to God, I don't give a crap about the numbers. I don't even look at the numbers. Mm-hmm. I make a conscious effort not to look at the numbers.
Look at anything.
No, that's true. Touche.
All right, I'm winning.
But for me, it's an excuse to call up someone I want to talk to. And when you can say, would you be on my Bluefish radio show? Man, people never say no, right?
Like, they don't.
They know. It's amazing. So you get to talk to all these great people. And I've made all these great friends all across Canada and through the United States, all these great contacts now. And yeah.
It's a lot of fun. And so the same reason I make my show, it's exactly that. It's the feedback from the audience and the fact that you could talk to musicians, artists, biologists, fisher people, whoever, you now have full access to people.
Yeah. And then you, if you edit it nicely, and I always make a good effort to edit, people love it because in a way it gives them a little bit of recognition for what they're doing, right?
And absolutely.
They share it with their friends, their family, their organizations, you know, and then people, they become your best promoters.
That'd be the hope. We always hope that they will. So
we always hope.
That's a funny game about podcasting, because you'd be shocked who doesn't promote. Has there ever been anyone who you've reached out to who said, no, I don't want to be on a podcast?
You know, sometimes government scientists, it's been sometimes a little bit tricky. Sometimes the reports coming out of NOAA, getting someone who wants to speak about those reports right now in the United States, right? That's can be a little bit tricky. And we went through that period in Canada as well. We had a very conservative government federally, and the scientists were told not to speak to anybody, and they couldn't talk to anyone at all.
Not their fault. They probably wanted to talk to you.
Yeah, they just weren't allowed for their careers. And otherwise, I'd say most people are great. The ones I have the most trouble with, though, are professors.
Oh, yeah, I hate those guys.
Because you ask them a question, and their answer is 30 minutes long.
Well, and that, so you need to manage your people. We have professors on. You know, Doc Martin's a professor, and she's like that. You'll ask her one question, she's fabulous, but you do get the whole answer.
Yeah, it's a lecture. It becomes a lecture, right? A classroom lecture, and then you tell them, look, I'm going to ask you these 10 questions, and we got 25 minutes, and then you get one question out, and it's 25 minutes.
But it could be 25 minutes of gold.
It's a lecture.
All right, and people want a conversation. So, first of all, what's the name of your show? It's Bluefish.
The Bluefish Radio Show.
Yeah, and that's at it. And you can get it most places podcasts are found.
Yeah, iTunes, all that. Yeah.
Yeah. So if people listen to this show, it's whatever podcast you're on, go listen to that show. You'll enjoy it. You do a little more serious show than I do.
I'm not last, having last key. You have a lot more fun than I do, that's for sure.
I don't know how to do either. I don't know how to be serious.
Yeah,
and you've been getting speaking gigs. You've been traveling around talking to people.
Yeah. But I also made a movie, a 79-minute documentary, where I really took this interviewing thing to the ninth degree, and I went around all over Canada and the Arctic, and I talked to people who live by the water, who live from the water. And I said, what's going on with your water? What's going on with your fish? And I got their stories, right? 10 great stories across Canada. And I didn't talk to no scientists, no politicians, no business people, you know, and people said, why? Don't you want their opinion? I said, no, because their opinion you can get on the internet. I'm talking to people that aren't on the internet, that don't have the communication spin doctors. And these are the people who have a real connection to their water, to their environment, to their fish, a historic, a long lasting, you know, connection. Those are the stories I wanted to capture. And we call it, it's called What Lies Below. It's on CBC Documentary Channel. It's been on there for a couple of years, and soon we'll have the rights to put it up on the internet. But we don't have the rights to put it on the internet yet, because you got to go through, you know, first the film festivals, then the TV, And then the internet in that order. Yeah.
And so is it, so you only through CBC you can get it. You can't get it like on your website or anything like that.
No, not yet. No, you can see the trailer at whatliesbelow.ca. Mm-hmm. And then if you sign up there, we'll let you know when it's going to be on the internet for download.
Well, I can't wait.
Yeah.
I can't wait. That sounds really, really cool.
It was an amazing experience, but I can't watch it. I mean, I've watched it a few times. I go to a film festival, the film starts, I leave the theater.
Right. What good is it to you?
Oh, that's I hear myself. Yeah. Oh, man, I sound so stupid.
Yeah. Well, maybe you're a little more sensitive than people.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, congratulations. That's really cool. Now, are you making a living in the fishing industry?
You know, you can't make a living doing tournament fishing in Canada. You can't make a living. There's a few ways to make a living. You can make a living, you know, selling fishing tackle. Mm-hmm. You can, but really, the opportunities to make a living in the fishing industry in Canada are really slim. I look it around and I say, holy mackerel, you know, there's only a handful of people that actually do this full-time for a living. I have a full-time gig, you know, and I have my charity. Mm-hmm. I don't get paid by my charity, you know, but the podcast pays some money now. But I'm hoping that when I retire, I'll be doing this stuff full-time and something will come out of it. I think for sure. I think the podcast is doing well and the charity is really growing. You know, we had a banner year in 2018. We got some great funding and great support and great, you know, we really hit our stride with our projects and the products that we're putting out through the charity. People love it. So I think there's a lot of growth potential there. And at some point they'll start hiring.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, cool. So people listen to your show, they can watch your movie eventually. What's the next thing that you want people to take away from getting a chance to meet you on our show? What's the next, like, what is your takeaway message?
You know what? I hear a lot of times, like, why do we do the things we do, right?
Yep.
In the water. And it's because it's out of sight, it's out of mind, right? Mm-hmm. And for thousands of millennia, we just tossed stuff into the river, into the lake, into the water, in the ocean, and it just went away. And it was fantastic. It was
like magic.
Yeah, it was magic. And it never mattered because it was organic material. We never had anything but organic material to toss in, so it was fine. And, you know, I talked to guys who guide below big cities on rivers, and they said, you know, the sewage, it creates weed growth, and that's fish habitat. It's good. It's good. Uh-huh. But now we're throwing in stuff that isn't so healthy, like pharmaceuticals, and they're causing fish to lose their sex orientation. You know, antidepressants are causing fish to lose their desire to spawn.
Wow. Yeah, mean, just like people.
Just yeah, like this. I'm hearing this, and scientists are starting to back this up. So you know, and then all the chemicals, the fast, the plastics. I think you know. More and more, I realize that what we need to do is to try to get people to visualize what's going on below the surface of our lakes and rivers and oceans, and not just see it as a Loch Ness monster down below, and we'll stay on top on our boats and jet skis and have fun. You know that there's other things going on down there that we need to sort of visualize. And I'm thinking, as a blind person, right? I visualize every day. Like I get out of bed, I open my no good eyes because I don't see anything anymore. I can't even tell if the lights are on or off. Mm-hmm. I open my eyes and I think, where am I? Okay, that's my right. Where's my yeah. There's my dresser. Where are my damn socks? You know, yeah. Crawling around on the floor, and I visualize all the rivers and lakes around my community. I know them all. And I visualize what's going on underwater when I'm fishing, and if I could pass on that sort of that desire to visualize like that, right? And some tips on how to visualize and why we need to visualize the underwater world and get people to sort of start to understand that the rivers are more than just a trench, you know, to get rid of rainwater, and lakes are more than just a place where we, you know, get our drinking water out of, that there's actually a whole world down there that we need to understand better and connect with. And fishing is just a wonderful way to connect because we're catching, you know, when you're looking at birds with binoculars or deer in the forest through, the window of your car or whatever, that's fine. That's great. But when you can't do that with fish necessarily, you got to connect with them another way. And fishing is a great way to connect with them. And if you can eat a fish, that means you're really connected, right?
Because you're part of the food chain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, perfect. That's a great message to end with for that. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hey, man. My pleasure. Because I've been listening to your show for the last year or so I got onto it. And I think, it's funny, man. I love what you're doing. I love what you're doing.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we've been messaging for like 4 months to get this interview to happen. I got bogged down with some health issues and stopped. Like every time I record, I hate how I sound now. So I've been re-recording episodes because I'm had to retrain myself how to breathe because my lung failed.
Yeah.
And so I'm aware of my every breath now. And it's a weird planet to be on. So
you sound good.
We got it worked out. I've been practicing.
So yeah.
We're
yeah.
Okay.
That, what's that mean for your singing career though?
It's over. Well, that was a lot of fun. This is Clay. I'm back. I'm recording the end of this podcast in the noisiest music Starbucks on the planet in North Conway, but just in time. But hey, that's it. I'll do all the promos and stuff next week. We got some new Patreon people we'll talk about, all kinds of fun. And so, yeah, that's it. You've listened to a bunch of fish nerds when you should have been fishing. Special thanks to my family for supporting me while I podcast and do Fishing Quest. Now I'm doing all the dumb things that I like to do. Very big thanks to Wally Pleasant for making our music this week for the theme song. And, of course, thank you to Lawrence Gunther, North America's only blind tournament angler and host of Blue Fish Radio Show. You can get information on him at bluefishcanada.ca. So until next time, follow the code of the fish nerd, spawn early, spawn often, never trust a free lunch with strings attached, and swim against the current every chance you get. Have a good night, everybody. Thanks.
Whether you're fly fishing in a stream, getting those ankles wet, or deep in the ocean casting nets, fish nerds, fish nerds, fish nerds, it's a podcast.
Just for the halibut!
Fried in a basket or broiled in a pan, eat it raw like you're in Siam. Fish nerds, fish nerds, fish nerds, it's a podcast.